All right, give me the general health of the Southeastern Conference.
Outstanding, in my view. We have continued to compete at the highest levels. You don't win every championship. That's our goal. We had five national championships and five additional second-place finishes in national championships. Our revenues continue to progress. We don't announce that until late January next year for the year. The SEC network has continued to attract eyeballs and viewership. We had the highest-rated conference championship game, 10 of the 20 highest-rated football games at the end of the football season last year, 8 of the top 25, and 7 men's basketball teams after 8 the year before in the NCAA men's basketball tournament. So things are outstanding, and our academic performance of our student-athletes continues to move forward in a positive way.
It's good to have you with us. You know, I sat through some of your press conferences down in Destin. Certainly enjoy that. You picked Atlanta next year. Did you consider Mobile?
I'm kidding. Would have made it easy for you. But I know. We missed that one.
We were talking, but I'll tell you, we'd be prepared down there. But let me ask you a question seriously. You talked about gambling at the state of the, and I was wondering, was there, putting this into perspective, you're putting an SEC school in Vegas, but then you're also, you know, bringing up the issue of gambling. That's was right. There kind of a conflict there or no?
I spoke very specifically about certain aspects of gambling. And so let's just be open and honest that legalized gambling has been in Las Vegas for decades. And I've been told there's other forms of gambling that have been around outside of Vegas on sports. And what we're seeing is the introduction of legalized gambling kind of state by state. And what I said is we need engagement of our state and federal legislators, if this is going to happen, to properly support the regulation, the oversight, and really transparency around sports gambling. While we may prefer not to have any gambling at all, it exists. I acknowledge that. We also said at a federal level, and this is what our presidents and chancellors have written to the NCAA President Emmert, to encourage their continued pursuit of a uniform standard for the laws that govern gambling. The next thing I said is, before we jump down the road into event-specific betting, like proposition bets on is a free throw good or missed, is a three-pointer successful or unsuccessful, and put more pressure on our student-athletes who are acknowledging mental health realities, everyone better take a step back before they go down that road. And I think that's not in conflict with the fact you can play a contest in Las Vegas or in Mississippi, where sports gambling is now legal. So we have to acknowledge that it's been legalized in our region. But I think my remarks are consistent with our decision-making and consistent with a set of policies that we talked about even last year.
What constitutes, because not only the SEC, but the ACC, changing some of the old guard with bowl games, what goes into that, determining, well, we're not going to go to this game from 21 to 25 or 2025 starting next after this coming season? So what goes into that kind of thinking to change bowl affiliations?
We have the best lineup of bowls, period. But we always want to improve, and we kept the Belk Bowl while adding the Las Vegas Bowl, so we didn't lose anything there. We have not had a contract bowl outside the SEC's geographic footprint in the modern era of college football. Everything's within our 11 state region, or really fewer than 11 states. Charlotte's right across the border. It's an hour from South Carolina, so I consider that SEC country as well. If you're going to do something outside our region, I think there were special places where it works. Las Vegas is one of those. And we share that rotation every year with the Big Ten. So we'll have the spot in 2020, the Big Ten in 2021. And then our coaches, some of our student-athletes and athletics directors challenge us on venues. And Shreveport's been a great host, and we appreciate Missy Setters and her staff and their board for their hospitality. But in the Gasparilla Bowl, it's an ESPN-managed bowl that will be played in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Stadium like the Outback Bowl is. You have a beach experience if you're playing around Christmas. And we thought that was a really healthy move and can bring some fans in to another bowl game easily in a destination city. So those are factors. Plus, we have payouts and revenue expectations and some changing dynamics around how we manage tickets. We wanted people to be a partner in that in a positive way, and that's what we've established.
Talking to the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Stanky. And, Greg, is there any motivation to look at football scheduling in terms of number of conference games, or is it you think in the SEC it's not broken, let's stick with what we got?
Fundamentally, the last statement, that what we do works, with a period on that. I've been open that every year we go through an evaluation process. So in January, a month after the season concludes, we spend 2 days with our athletics directors and a deep dive on everything around football. I initiated that my first year as commissioner, that football-focused meeting. We'll look at what's happening across the college football playoff landscape, what other conferences' approaches to scheduling is or might be. Here's the reality. What I've messaged is you need to play 10 quality games. Now, 8 of those are provided by the conference schedule. There's really not been an interest in the league at moving to 9, certainly at this point or in the foreseeable future. Other people have done that with very specific reasons, generally around television negotiations or creation of a network. We have outstanding television contracts and a great SEC network with 8 games. But you've seen Florida this year playing 10 games against Autonomy 5 opponents, Miami on the front end, Florida State on the back end, and 8 SEC games in between. Georgia with Notre Dame's doing the same thing. South Carolina's doing the same thing. And I think our universities are heeding the message about those 10 quality games being a point of focus.
Greg, let me ask you something. Fortunately for the SEC, it's been a relatively very quiet offseason in contrast to some of the others. But you often hear, like, well, will the commissioner's office get involved in this, or a conflict here, or maybe the NCAA may be coming in or something about that? Do you actually get involved with each university, or do they call you, or do you pick up the phone and say, look, this has got to stop, or we have to do something about this?
Absolutely. I don't have to issue press releases about those phone calls.
I hope not. No, you don't.
And I appreciate the leadership on our campuses who engage in those conversations. Yesterday morning, I'm trying to prepare a speech, and I had 2 of those conversations. But that's part of being in a conference. That's part of being a commissioner. So I will take the fact it's quiet as a compliment. A lot of our storylines play out in the headlines, but there's a lot of work that takes place outside those headlines, and that's with dialogue with our campuses on a regular basis.
What's the role of the commissioner's office when it comes to basketball and the big picture story in basketball with the FBI investigation and all that? Obviously, the NCAA as a whole is going to deal with that and has been dealing with that. But what's the role of the SEC office in that?
Well, there's really 2 different questions. So what's our role in basketball? We have an associate commissioner for men's basketball. We have a video staff. There's a whole men's basketball operation. We have staff focused on women's basketball and video staff that works there. But then we get into the compliance question. So that's a different silo, if you will, even though there's collaboration in our office. We were tasked back in 2004 not to investigate. So we're not investigators. We haven't been in the past 15 years. We are advisors. We have an accountability role when facts are determined. But we don't make decisions and never have, whether I was a commissioner or my predecessors, based on rumor and innuendo and partial stories and half stories. We have an NCAA, National Association, with an enforcement staff with whom we'll talk, but they have a responsibility for investigating. When the facts are determined, they may impose the accountability. The institution may impose the accountability, and sometimes it's a conference office that imposes the accountability.
Very good.
I know one of the other issues down in Destin, and I'm sure I wasn't at your state of the conference address, officiating, review of officials.
Yeah.
Where do we go with that?
Well, there are elements to this. First of all, we've had a year-long, probably more, conversation about the changing culture around our competitions, particularly officiating. It's not something I think we created, so we see TV broadcasts with embedded experts stating their opinion. Doesn't mean they're right. We have commentators that will dwell on issues. Doesn't mean they're right. We have people who can stay at home and watch an HDTV with a DVR and make decisions and talk or ask or comment about those. We have a role to educate and inform. And yesterday I really talked about fulfilling that role. So we went through an external review, because if I call a coach and say, hey, tell me what you think about our officiating, that's different from a neutral party calling and having that conversation. So we involved Deloitte Consulting to conduct those interviews, also to go through some analytics of our game data to see if there are any trends to which we need to be attentive, and then compare our standards and practices. Very direct responsibility and had really helpful outputs, invited a number of our referees to Destin for a conversation with our football coaches because they want to have more conversation and build their working relationship and understand each side, and both groups asked for that interaction. We'll be sending officiating crews out to preseason practice for the first time intentionally. Two-day camps to work in practice, to be in meeting rooms, to talk about rule changes. And then we've been public that we're going to educate and inform through a website. Hey, here's what happens week to week in officiating. Here's what happens through the year. I think that's our responsibility. I don't expect everyone to think we're right. In fact, I expect we'll be wrong from time to time. But we do have a responsibility to make sure people understand the hard work by the high-character people who officiate games with integrity.
I really respect the fact you're trying to be more transparent with officiating in football, and you've started this new online social media account where you're going to be more accountable, more transparent. Has there been any talk or would there be any support for having officials made available to the media, like immediately after the game, to say, here's why that play took place the way it was called, the way it was?
No, we think that's better done through the conference office. If you go to the Rams-Saints playoff game, they had an official, the referee, I think, meet with a pool reporter who did not see the play that was the center of the controversy. So from a value standpoint, we can comment and explain as needed, and we're not going to be in some social media discussion. The reality is we're educating and informing. We're not being transparent. I've not used that word.
I got you.
We're going to educate and inform people, and from time to time we'll have to explain why a call was right and perhaps – maybe why a call went a different way on occasion. But I think that's the reality of the society in which we live.
Greg, we appreciate it very much. Appreciate talking to you every year, including this year, and congratulations on another good year.
Absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen.
There you go. The commissioner of the SEC, of course, is Greg Sankey. He joins us here on the Sports Station. We'll come back right after this with our continued